Welcome to RHRealityCheck.org's RealityCast, where we inject truth into the sex and reproductive health debate. Each week, we'll be bringing you news, opinion, and advice on sexual health issues, as well as interviews with some of the most prominent names in sexual health advocacy. Here's your host, Amanda Marcotte.
On this episode of RealityCast, Steph Harold will be on to talk about her new mission to get women talking about abortion online. Also, I review a pro-choice take on the new TSA screening processes and take another look at the story about George Bush and the fetus in a jar. The Daily Show had a great time making fun of John McCain constantly moving the goalpost on what it would take for him to consider supporting a repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Hello, Senator McCain. We know you're going through a tough time with this Don't Ask, Don't Tell thing, but trust us, it gets worse.
Seriously, it's all downhill from here.
The head of the military doesn't even agree with you.
Your own wife doesn't agree with you.
Your own wife? Holy
s***. She's very attractive, but that is irrelevant to this discussion.
But it gets worse.
Because sooner or later, gay people are going to wind up serving.
And then 20 years later, they'll make the documentary about it.
And you know how every documentary about some big social change has a bad guy?
The guy who fought it tooth and nail long after it was obvious to everyone else what needed to be done?
You know, the George Wallace character. That's gonna be you.
Saying stuff like,
black people don't belong in a white man's military. Or,
I have no problem with Catholics.
I just don't want one in the White House taking orders on a special Pope phone to Rome. Or,
a lady astronaut.
But what about the gazungas? Won't they get in the way?
That'll be you.
I can't believe McCain didn't realize that the leadership and the research would come to this point where he'd be caught in a lie. I just don't get it. What did he think would happen? This may not seem completely relevant to the topic of this podcast, but I think it is, if you'll bear with me.
The issue du jour around here on the DR show, the Homeland Security Department asking for patience with those full body scanners and invasive pat-downs this holiday season. But for many, patience has already run out. Like one passenger who was tossed from the San Diego airport this weekend after this testy exchange with a TSA screener, the man's cell phone catching the entire ordeal on camera.
If you touch my junk, I'm going to have you arrested. I don't understand how a sexual assault can be made a condition of my flight.
I think everyone in this country understands the issue by now. But I'll recap. The Transportation Security Administration has decided rather suddenly that they want to up the amount of hassle that passengers get at security in airports. The official reason is they're afraid of terrorism, but as Lindsay Beierstein pointed out, they've also been trying to bully people into submitting to full-body scan machines. It used to be that you could opt out of the body scan and get a pat-down instead, but that took longer, and plus it made it harder to justify spending money on these scanners. So what they did was to change the protocol so the TSA agent is basically fondling your sexual body parts, like your genitalia. I think they hoped people will pick the scan over having their junk fondled, basically. The result is chaos and revolt for a couple of reasons. The first one is one that's hard for me to take, as cynical as I am after spending years pushing for civil liberties. And that's that there have been a couple of cases of small children having their privates touched by TSA agents. One was a little girl whose father happened to be a journalist.
My three-year-old daughter, Mandy, went from this happy little girl to this during an ordeal through security. My cell phone has about 17 seconds of this. Here, a TSA employee we've decided not to show is patting down Mandy while my wife holds her. First, they tried a handheld metal detector. Mandy was not in the mood. And the TSA employee, well, in my opinion, did not know how to communicate to her. All of this started after Mandy's teddy bear was taken away for screening.
This is frightening because basically it's not only cruel on the spot, but it sends a message to kids that they should submit to intimate touching from adults if they are authority figures. To be clear, I'm not with some of the people who are being over the top about this and saying that TSA agents are getting off on it. I'm sure some are, because creeps are everywhere. But most agents had this sprung on them too, and let's face it, finding another job in this economy is a frightening prospect. This was not part of the job they signed up for. The other thing that really set it off was this guy from the first clip, the "Don't touch my junk" guy. Yeah, the TSA publicly opened an investigation on him after he publicized the clip. Basically, they are using the power of the government to criticize free expression of a friggin' political opinion, which is exactly what the First Amendment was written to protect. Most of the time on this podcast, I focus on being pro-choice because it's about women's equality and religious freedom, as well as about public health. But civil liberties and the right not to have your bodily autonomy violated is a big part of this. One reason the state and the church like to go after women's rights is that women, especially when they violate some chastity standards, are second-class citizens, and few people defend them. And that warms the public up to the idea that the government has a right to control our bodies. And then you start to see crap like this TSA security theater. Take this story, for instance.
This is little baby Isabella, 5 months old this week. The ACLU lawsuit says it was poppy seeds on a bagel her mom, Elizabeth Mort, had eaten that triggered a false positive on a Jameson Hospital drug test. The ACLU says the hospital reported the mother to Lawrence County Children and Youth Services, which showed up at the family's home days after Isabella's birth and took the mom's baby away.
This kind of crap happens all the time, and feminist media cares about it. And sometimes local news media cares about it. The ACLU cares about it. But it's not getting endless coverage on cable news, and people aren't organizing a day of protest. That, I believe, is in no small part due to the fact that the people who tested this woman without her knowledge and called the cops on her were smarter about choosing their victims. The parents in this case, from the beaming family picture I'm looking at right now, appear to be a white woman and a black man. The TSA needs to be stopped right away from groping people. But we need to think of civil liberties as belonging to everyone. I'd like to welcome Steph Harrell to the program. Steph has worked in abortion care provision before and was moved by the murder of Dr. George Tiller to start a website called I Am Dr. Tiller, where people on the ground doing the actual work can speak out. She also started the Twitter account I Am Dr. Tiller, and from there has been a pioneer in the work of using Twitter as an activism tool. She's here today to talk about one bit of Twitter activism she performed. Welcome to RealityCast, Steph.
Thanks, Amanda. Thanks for having me.
So what you did was you started a hashtag on Twitter called I Had an Abortion, where women could speak out about their abortion history and their feelings about it. Why did you decide to do this?
A lot of people think that it's because of politics and the results of the election, but I actually think this hashtag could have been started last year or a few years ago. It really is just about the beginning of trying to end the stigma associated with abortion in multiple ways. And I thought one way of doing it was on Twitter, where women can be kind of semi-anonymous about it and also find community at the same time.
And do you feel that women that have had abortions and found out about this were responsive? Were there women who were happy or at least willing to talk about it on Twitter?
Yes, there were actually a lot, especially in the beginning when the hashtag was created, there were a lot of women who came forward and used the hashtag. Now, many of them, when I talked to them kind of by email, were public about their abortions before. But this gave them a new outlet to find community on Twitter and then kind of enter the pro-choice online community and come to activism in that way.
So why do you think speaking out about abortion could destigmatize it?
I think one of the reasons that abortion is so difficult to talk about is because we don't have venues to talk about it. And I think using our everyday social media tools that we use to talk about anything else, from the news to what we ate for lunch, abortion, because it's so common, should just be another thing that we're allowed to talk about.
You were accused when it kind of first started of trivializing abortion. Sorry, not
right,
destigmatizing,
sure.
But actually trivializing.
Trivializing,
abortion.
Right? Yeah.
Do you, Do you think that 140 characters somehow trivializes abortion and speaking about these experiences?
I actually think abortion should be trivialized. For some women, it is a really big decision, and for others, it's not. And I think we need to talk about it. And if Twitter provides you a good medium to talk about abortion, great. I'm not saying, or I wasn't asking, that anyone who's ever had an abortion has to use this hashtag and has to talk about their abortion in this way. For people who feel like that's the easiest way for them to do it, instead of talking to their family or as kind of a beginning step in being able to talk about it, great.
So for women, though, who do feel like it was a big deal and it was emotionally wrenching for them, how do you feel that they might react to this?
Some of them actually use the hashtag. I think some people were glad to see it, and I got emails from people who said they did not want to use the hashtag, but were glad that it was there so they could see what other people were saying and see that others were comfortable coming out about it. And some emailed me and said, you know, I'm really uncomfortable with this. And that's fine. And that's another thing about Twitter. If you don't want to read it, if you're not comfortable seeing it, X out of the window.
Well, obviously doing the research for this interview, went to the hashtag and read what was going on today.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still going.
Not tonight.
Yeah, it's incredibly cluttered up with angry, hostile anti-choicers who are calling women names, shaming them, condescending to them. Was this something you anticipated happening, and how do you feel about it?
I'm disappointed, but I'm not shocked. When I started the hashtag, I had no idea if anybody was even going to use it or if it was going to take off. I was really glad that it did, but I'm not surprised that it's become kind of another kind of anti-choice flame war in there. I wish that it wasn't. Yeah.
I was surprised to see, though, that despite that, there were still women speaking out very touchingly in 140 characters about their abortions.
Right, right.
So it just continues to go on.
Right, right.
So with all the crazy anti-choicers on there, though, do you think that they're undermining your project and your cause as much as they think they are?
No, I don't think so. At least that's what I have to tell myself, right? I mean, what has been so interesting for me to see is that there's a community of pro-choice people on Twitter who usually speak out and engage the anti-choice people and call them on their shit, essentially. And this hashtag has brought out a lot of new people who are starting to do that. I mean, and that's not something that I have the patience to do, but I think it's great that others have kind of, you know, seen that this is something that they're passionate about and are willing to take on.
So I have a kind of complex question I want to present to you. Do you think that abortion speakouts are different now? Because I know that they were a major tool for organizing the pro-choice movement when abortion was legal or was illegal. And it was meant to challenge existing laws and say, like, this is what a legal abortion looks like. Now it's about challenging anti-choice sentiment. And a lot of so-called pro-lifers, I don't think that they really think about the actual ban on abortion that they advocate for. They just don't even think about women going to jail or anything. They just screech about fetuses.
Right.
So do you think that these speak outs address some of the underlying legal issues, or is it just not about that at all?
This is a complicated question. I think that legal issues are always there when you go kind of deeper beneath just trying to destigmatize or demystify. Because ultimately, when anti-choice people are screeching about fetuses, if you peel that back, what they want is for abortion to be illegal. What they want is for women to be ashamed of having sex. What they, you know, if you just kind of keep going deeper and deeper, the sexism and incredible misogyny just kind of reveals itself. So while we may not be talking about the, you know, the laws at speak out type things, and then maybe we should. Maybe that should be something that's more prevalent.
I guess one final question, though, about like the kind of anti-choice backlash that sort of ate it up to a degree. Do you think that there's any hope that they're at least revealing something to somebody who doesn't pay much attention to the issue about who they are and the misogyny you were talking about? Or are they just good at concealing it?
I think they're horrible at concealing it. I think, I mean, and that is great for us. There's, you don't have to go to great lengths to show that someone is slut-shaming or to show that somebody is really just calling someone names. I mean, that's pretty blatantly insulting. Yeah, the total lack of sympathy, lack of listening, or understanding of nuance, I mean, that's definitely there.
My guest today has been Steph Harold. There are many places to read her work, but I recommend immediately following her on Twitter. Her handle is IamDrTiller. Thanks for coming on to RealityCast, Steph.
Sure, thanks for having me, Amanda.
It's an article of faith for anti-choicers that someone who learns there's actually a fetus inside a woman's pregnant belly will instantly and without hesitation decide that woman has lost all her rights to bodily autonomy. The anti-choice community is rife with mostly false stories about how formerly pro-choice people were informed about the fact that fetuses are actually inside pregnant women, and they changed their opinion on abortion rights. These stories justify floating pictures of fetuses around, either intact ones from ultrasounds or the gruesome ones that purport to be from abortions, though many of those pictures are faked or from relatively rare and medically necessary late-term abortions. Personally, I just think they like fetus pictures as fetish objects, much the way I like vinyl records or band t-shirts. It's a nice reminder of my hobby, though I suppose my hobby is healthier for me. I bring this up because, as you may have heard, George Bush saw a fetus his mother's body expelled when he was a teenager. I'm not making fun of Barbara Bush, at least not in this particular instance. What happened to her sounds kind of awful. And it was her son, George Bush, that took her to the hospital.
And you were the one who drove her to the hospital, and you write, quote, "I never expected to see the remains of the fetus, which she had saved in a jar to bring to the hospital. There was a human life, a little brother or sister."
This was immediately seized upon as the reason Bush is anti-abortion by much of the media and public. Again, because of this myth that knowing there's a fetus in there will make you suddenly anti-abortion. Never mind that pretty much every pro-choicer is quite aware what a fetus is, thank you very much. And never mind that most abortions happen well before the period where a fetus looks like much at all, since it's tiny and doesn't resemble a person. You rarely see early-term fetuses in the fetus paraphernalia anti-choicer's favor. Bush himself smiled a bit on this interpretation of his story, that it's all about abortion.
It's also, though, impossible not to draw parallels between that moment where you said this was a little brother or sister and your views on life.
That's
and
true.
When it begins.
No question that affected me, my philosophy, that we should respect life. And I was a pro-life president.
This is a fishy story for two reasons. One is that Barbara Bush was almost surely pro-choice at the time and is known not to be a sentimental person on top of that. The second is that the reason George Bush is anti-choice is more obvious than this. It's part of his faith as an evangelical Christian, for one thing. Another, and probably more important reason, is that he pretty much had to be hardline anti-abortion to get anywhere as a politician, since his base is so misogynist. But I do think he's a true believer, since his administration did so much to discourage contraception use. But if he was compelled by the love of fetuses, he would be pro-contraception, since contraception prevents abortion. Since he was anti-contraception as a president, we can exclude the pro-fetus rationale for his point of view. Plus, Barbara Bush doesn't see it that way at all.
Paola put it in a jar, and I was shocked when she gave it to him to... But your memory's dim a little bit, but anyway. But he was
very... You're shocked that he put it in the book?
No, he asked permission. And I gave him permission, if that's his book. And I think he was trying to say that he and I have a very special relationship. We tease all the time, and that's not very nice of me. But, you know, you got to tease a little bit.
Yeah, that's not the language of someone who thinks this is a human corpse or the same as a dead baby. More like it's a novelty, like you're saying, this is kind of weird but neat. In fact, if you go back to George Bush's interview, I think that's actually what he was saying too.
Once she trusted me, and when you're a teenage kid, you know, you're kind of self-absorbed person, and your mom says, I trust you, it's a boost in confidence. And my mom is a, I mean, what I learned was she's a straightforward person.
Right.
She says to her teenage kid, here's a fetus.
Oh, and he said this, too.
The purpose of the story really wasn't to try to show the evolution of a pro-life point of view. It's really to show how my mom and I developed a relationship.
Here's what I think happened. I think Barbara Bush had a miscarriage and perhaps did show her son the fetus. But in that way you do when you have a nasty bruise or a broken fingernail and you show your loved ones or friends. It's a combination of commiserating, and it's also because it's interesting to see that stuff, which can look weird. Back then, the Bushes were pro-choice. This anti-choice interpretation is being tacked on, and obviously with much reluctance, because it serves a political agenda. But that's not how they actually feel about it. And now for the Wisdom of Wingnuts, not the way to protest edition. I'm glad Mike Huckabee is speaking out against the TSA searches, but this isn't the way to do it.
He thinks this is an appropriate way for us to deal with security, mm-hmm. as he has defended.
He has.
Then I've said, okay, Mr. Obama, take your wife, your two daughters, and your mother-in-law to Washington Reagan National Airport and have them publicly go through both the body scanner and the full enhanced pat-down in front of others. Mm-hmm. And if it's okay for your wife, your daughters, and your mother-in-law, then maybe the rest of us won't feel so bad when our wives, our daughters, and our mothers are being put through this humiliating and degrading, totally unconstitutional intrusion of their privacy.
The unconstitutional part I can get behind, but the rest? He makes it sound like women are property that belong to men, and that the real offense is to him because his women folk that he owns are being touched. What about women not connected to a husband or father? Are they eligible for abuse?
That's it for this week's edition of Reality Cast. Please tune in next week for another dose of reality in the sexual health debate. Visit www.rhrealitycheck.org and sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, various news feeds, and daily emails. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.